Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
The two-man triple threat, Sean Pendergast alongside Rich Lord, who has had a career of many, many men between 20 and 99 years. How you doing, Rich?
I'm doing well, Sean. Two-man triple threat, at least until our old friend John McClain us here in the 4
Friday, we're somewhat truthful.
And actually, in truth, it'll be more than a three-man triple threat at that point, because I expect at least, I'm going to put the over-under on posse members at 5.5.
This is usually a pretty well-attended posse
yes.
place out here.
And spouses of posse members count.
That's, yeah, of course they do. Yeah, they absolutely count. So, man, a lot of stuff to get into today. Rich, you and I were just talking.
We are so blessed.
You and I were just talking before the show.
Oh, my goodness.
And I'm going, when was the last time that we talked this much NBA when the Rockets were knocked out of the postseason?
Sean, I've been juiced up since my drive home last night when I was listening to Sean Bajani and Josh Beard talk about how, I guess sometime either after our show had ended at 6 or just before our show ended at 6, Daryl Morey, Tillman Fertitta, and at least in spirit, Tad Brown, the three of them just basically impromptu gathering in a hallway did a quick sort of media availability, and they had some of the audio from that. And as soon as I heard Tillman Fertitta say, "I don't know what a lame duck is," I was in. Because we used that term in our conversation yesterday when it was reported that Mike D'Antoni's contract negotiations had come to an end without an agreement beyond this coming season.
Yeah, and we there's so much to lay out with this,
there
Rich,
is.
Because this is not just a Mike D'Antoni topic. It is in that Mike D'Antoni's contract is what's triggering all this.
Yeah.
But to me, this is the latest step in the unveiling of what business and life is going to be like with Tillman Fertitta as the owner of the Rockets.
I think so, too. And it was pretty clear with
that. And it's going to be pretty good for people in our business.
I mean,
I don't know if it's going to lead to the number of basketball wins that everybody
right.
wants.
That's,
but my God, the soap opera.
And thus the discussion
yes.
begins.
Yes.
Look, Tillman Fertitta knows what a lame duck is. Saying, "What is a lame duck? I don't even know what a lame duck is his way of expressing his anger.
Yeah.
Over Mike D'Antoni's situation being referenced as a lame duck situation. But I'm not going to back down from that characterization of this situation. I absolutely believe that this is setting the stage for the inevitable dismissal of Mike D'Antoni, and I still think it's very much on the table that he might not be the coach this fall when they start their next season.
I do, too. I feel less that that's going to be the case after seeing these clips yesterday, but I'm with you, Rich, and you brought up the lame duck aspect of this yesterday, and we're going to lay this out more over the next segment or two with some of the audio from the media session that you
right.
talked about. But just with respect to the lame duck aspect to this, and for those who don't know, just to lay out where the story's at right now, Mike D'Antoni and his agent had a meeting yesterday. At least Mike D'Antoni's agent did. I don't know that D'Antoni was in the meeting or not, but his representation sat down with the Rockets to talk about a contract beyond the coming season. The Rockets have already opted into Mike D'Antoni as the head coach of this basketball team at a reported $4.5 million a year. That thanks to an article by Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle, which actually gives out great detail as to what exactly was discussed in that meeting yesterday between Fertitta, the Rockets,
yep.
Daryl Morey, you mentioned Tad Brown.
Some great reporting by John.
And Mike D'Antoni's side. And so he's locked in contractually for this coming season, 2019-2020. 2020-2021 and beyond is what was discussed yesterday and ultimately what Mike D'Antoni's side decided to walk away from.
Trying to avoid him being in a situation where he's coaching in the final year of his
yeah.
deal with no assurances beyond that and the uncertainty that surrounds that kind of situation.
Yeah, yeah. And you brought that up yesterday, Rich, the uncertainty. We'll get into all the dollars and what Tillman said and Tillman floating a number out there about the incentive portion of the contract. And I don't know that it was the amount tied to the incentives that would make Mike D'Antoni walk away as much as the mere existence of the majority of his income being generated potentially by incentive-based income. I just don't know that that's the way business is done in the NBA. But you mentioned the lame duck thing yesterday, Rich, and I actually heard they played it on Mad Radio, you and I discussing that. And at the time I said, I feel like there's some myth in the lame duck thing with 1 year left. And I do, and maybe that's part of my business background. The same way Tillman's business background is kind of showing through in the way he's handling things with the Rockets,
which may not be good for the Rockets.
It may not be. I've always had the feeling that I hate seeing coaches especially coach, and Mike D'Antoni's not an underperformer, but especially underperforming coaches that are in the last year of a deal get an extension because, you know, that somehow they're immune to what the rest of society has to do, which is do well on the last year of their contract to get a new one. So that's always frustrated me. But Seth brought up a pretty good point this morning about this specifically, that imagine if the Rockets go through a similar start this coming season as they went through at the beginning of last season. And remember, the beginning of this past season, they started out 11-14. The very beginning was even worse than 11-14.
1-5.
Carmelo Anthony was in that mix. It was not a good time for the Rockets. What would happen in a locker room like that? We saw it 3 years ago with Kevin McHale as a head coach, and they started out 4-7. He wound up getting fired. So I do think maybe the dynamics of an NBA locker room, maybe the dynamics specifically of a star player that we've seen here before on a team that started out slowly with James Harden, and I'm not putting that all at his feet, but James has a big say in that building over there. I think maybe in this particular case, there could be something to more to. Maybe I didn't give as much credence to the lame duck aspect of this as I probably should have, that you were giving to it.
The developments of the last 24 hours, the Morey, Fertitta, Tad Brown sort of, media availability at Toyota Center, followed by the Fagan reporting today, and we'll get into the details of that in a moment, but this is a very significant development in this narrative that Jonathan has reported and put online within the last hour. All of this has pushed what was one of the most memorable game ones of the NBA Finals I can recall onto kind of the back burner, at least for the moment. It's appropriate that we open the dialogue this afternoon talking about D'Antoni and the Rockets, because I think that's the biggest thing going on here in Houston today. But game one of the NBA Finals was pretty noteworthy as well.
It's a good start for us, Rich. We're on the Raptors bandwagon. You and I both picked the Raptors in seven. Here's the scary thing, I think, if you're Golden State, is obviously Kevin Durant still banged up. Andre Iguodala limped off the court at the end of the game last night. Boogie Cousins does not look like he's going to be a factor in this series.
Played 8 minutes. I should have took the under.
He's fat. He looks like he ate Boogie Cousins. And and here's the thing, Rich. Kawhi Leonard and Kyle Lowry, they're two most prominent weapons offensively. You know, Kawhi Leonard's one of the best players in the league, and Lowry is the guy that kind of makes the whole engine go. They were a combined 7-23 from the field. Now, Pascal Siakam's not going to go 14-17 and wreak havoc in transition the way he did in all the games of this series.
Presumably.
Yeah, I mean, they were giving up a lot of easy buckets in the half court and in transition, the Warriors were.
He looked very at ease doing what he was doing last night.
Did.
Now he hit 11 shots in a row. That's the hottest shooting streak in a finals game in a couple of decades. So he's not going to be as good as he was last night. But in terms of the level of force he'll exert on the outcome of this series, it's one of the most intriguing storylines as we head into Game 2 on Sunday.
Yeah.
This kid is 7 years removed from a Basketball Without Borders camp in Africa.
Yeah.
And the story I read was that the reason he was there was not because he wanted to pursue a basketball career. He had a sister that lived near the camp that he hadn't seen in 5 years. That eventually turned into a free ride at New Mexico State, and look where he is now.
Yeah, I think I heard the story right, that it was actually Luke and Bob Mute that found him.
I believe that's right.
And so that's amazing. What a story, and what a likable player too. Interview after the game, you couldn't have been happier.
You're talking about his late dad, who we lost a few years ago.
Yeah,
very compelling stuff.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to like about Toronto last night for sure. So we will dig our claws into game one at some point here. But yeah, there's a lot going on with the Rockets. We'll get to some Texans as well. And I said earlier, Rich, I think this is now the first really big indicator that Tillman Fertitta is realizing he's not in the restaurant business with the Rockets, and we'll tell you what exactly is that realization, what exactly is leading us to that realization next. You're listening to Sports Radio 610. We talked in the open about the impromptu media session yesterday with Tillman Fertitta, Daryl Morey, and Tad Brown, kind of giving the Rockets side of things, really about the not just the Mike D'Antoni negotiations, which have been the front and center story the last couple days, but I think they also responded to Adrian Wojnarowski saying that everybody's available on the roster. Daryl kind of saying, yeah, I mean, that's kind of my MO every year, is to look at all the deals that are out there. But as far as Mike D'Antoni's contract, that's the big topic now. Jonathan Fagan has a really good rundown of Mike D'Antoni's side of the negotiations with some detail about what the contract that was proposed to him, the extension that was proposed to him, looked like. Here is Tillman Fertitta on the types of deals that they've discussed with Mike D'Antoni.
we're not going to ever probably go do crazy long-term contracts for coaches, okay? But Mike's our coach. If we're successful, we're going to sit down at the end of this year and we'll keep working it out. I would prefer him to always work with at least a two-year contract. His agent decided that that's not the way they want it to work. We wanted to keep Mike, not this year, but again next year, and then sit down after this year and extend him again, okay? But a two-year rolling after a three- or four-year contract is somewhat normal in sports.
Okay, one more from Tillman Fertitta. Yeah. This is on the incentive-based portion. And I don't know, Rich, I'll be honest with you, of contracts around the world of sports, I know NFL contracts pretty well for a regular radio host. I think I know NBA contracts pretty decently for a regular radio host, baseball as well. I've never really dug into coaches' contracts before, mostly because they don't count against the salary cap.
Right.
So it doesn't affect your ability. I mean, unless you're pinching pennies, it doesn't affect your ability to field a team, what you're paying the coach.
All we know is that over the last decade or so, they've exploded in all sports.
And I'll say this, Mike D'Antoni's contract, even now, even the one he signed before Tillman got here, was middle of the pack in the NBA. He's not among the highest paid coaches in the NBA, but he's not back of the pack either. Here is Tillman Fertitta on the extension that was discussed with Mike D'Antoni's representation yesterday.
I made Mike a great extension offer. It was one of the better base salaries in basketball, but also had the highest incentives in basketball. Mike could make $4 million in incentives. And if you talk about it was $4 million worth of incentives. And if you go from the second round to winning the championship, you can get there real easy, okay? And I've always, you know, business is business, and I'm a very incentive-based guy. And if you perform, I want you to do unbelievable. And if you don't perform, then let's always just sit down and talk about why you didn't perform.
All right, so that's Tillman Fertitta on the Rocket side of what was offered. Just a couple quick facts from the Fagan article, Rich, and then we can sound off on this.
Yeah.
Couple things in here. Jonathan Fagan saying the contract offer made to D'Antoni was considerably smaller than the $5 million that had been depicted by Tillman Fertitta and Daryl Morey in a hastily called news conference on Thursday. I didn't hear them say five. I heard them say four. But four was just the incentives that Tillman was talking about. Theoretically, that if he got all the incentives, that would seem to make the contract even bigger than $5 million if he were to accomplish all those. Mike D'Antoni's agent said this. I'd like to clear up some inaccuracies that were stated about the offer to Mike.
Warren Legere.
The reported $5 million is really $2.5 million because it comes with contingencies. It's only $5 million if he makes the playoffs, and two, if he's coaching the team at the end of the year. Now, I think those two things might go hand in hand. If it doesn't look like they're going to make the playoffs, Mike D'Antoni could very easily get fired at some point during the year. So the downside on this thing, whereas I think most coaches' contracts are a salary, and it's guaranteed for the whole year regardless of performance. And obviously some salaries are bigger than others based on the level of coach you are. Greg Popovich makes $11 million a year, but he's Greg Popovich. He's won five championships. This, to me, I could see where Mike's side of it, Rich, is looking at it and says, this is basically a $2.5 million contract.
Yes, and Jonathan asked Warren Legere if the offer, which could wind up in D'Antoni only receiving that $2.5 million
right.
in 2020-2021, was an insult. And Legere said, no, we don't look at it as an insult. I'll go ahead and speak for D'Antoni and Legere. It's an insult to throw an offer like this to Mike D'Antoni and to characterize it as, as Tillman just said, if you don't perform, we're going to sit down and talk about why that didn't happen. Translation, if you don't perform, I can get out of this contract by paying you 50% of your salary and be scot-free and free of you. I mean, like you said, Sean, D'Antoni has not failed. I mean, I don't think it's crazy to say that short of Rudy Tomjanovich's two championships, he's the most successful coach this franchise has ever had. Certainly his three-year tenure would suggest that, especially with including going to Game 7 against the Western against the Warriors in the Western Finals last year. And then the first cut you played, I'm not in the business of handing out crazy long-term deals. Well, first of all, D'Antoni's got 1 year left on his current deal, and we're talking about a two-year extension. Nobody was discussing anything more than a two-year extension beyond the year he's got left on his current deal. To characterize what that to characterize that as a crazy long-term deal or some sort of situation that he would never entertain is misleading at best. And the great offer, quote, we made him a great offer. If Warren Legere is telling Jonathan Fagan the truth, and I'm sure he is, this is not a great offer.
Yeah.
I'll go back to the beginning of my comment. This is an insult.
Yeah. Rich, I feel like I have a unique perspective on this because I used to write incentive-based comp plans back in the day for people that I was trying to convince to come work at our company. You know what I mean? Like to convince them that, hey, this is your chance to grab the brass ring. This is your chance. This is what you're going to make in your base salary. But boy, if you blow it up, you're going to make this. And a lot of times there's a lot of truth into it. There's some salesmanship that goes into it. There's some stressing the upside of it to make it look like, hey, man, look, you could make $6 or $7 million if this happens. That's all well and good. In the world that Tillman Fertitta comes from, the restaurant business, the casino business, any type of business really other than professional sports, this type of stuff is normal and happens all the time.
I agree, but this isn't business.
Incentive,
he said business is business. The NBA is not business.
It's not, and this is what I said to the guys in the toss, Rich. I said, this is kind of a scary thing right now if you're a Rockets fan, because this is an indicator that Tillman is running the Rockets like he's running the restaurant business, and it's not the same. It's just
no,
not the
not
same.
Good. That's well, not good.
It's the same in that there's a profit and loss. It's
of
the same
course.
In that it is a business. However, the best owners out there, I think, are the ones...
You don't
ones,
manage your assets the same way.
The best owners out there, the most successful ones, I think, a lot of times are the ones that just kind of treat the professional sports team like it's their... Like they're trying to win a championship for their city, not that they're looking at the bottom line on the whole
thing.
And
many of them also let the people they've hired... who have decades of experience in the NBA business, yeah. not the quote-unquote business world, advise and make those NBA decisions. Look, Sean, I totally believe that, and I mentioned this yesterday, gutting his coaching staff was phase one.
Yeah.
This is phase two yeah. of how do we get D'Antoni to quit.
Yeah,
I'm convinced this is all about how do we get D'Antoni to quit. Now, D'Antoni's got $4.5 million guaranteed for next season.
Yeah.
So if he quits, the Rockets... don't owe him.
They're
that.
Off the hook, yeah.
If they fire him, of course, they still are going to owe him that money. And there was a very short little comment that Tillman made in that media availability yesterday that I thought was very telling. He, in sort of an aside, complained about how they just got done paying off the other coach. And they're sure he's talking about Kevin McHale.
Yeah.
There was money left on his deal, which is common
yeah.
in these types of situations.
Yeah.
He is absolutely dead set against paying two coaches at the same time. That's why I'm not sure he's going to fire him. But we're in a situation where we've come to loggerheads, and he's created a very uncomfortable atmosphere.
I want to say one more thing about what you said about it being insulting. And Mike D'Antoni has taken the right tact with this whole thing, and he's the good guy in this thing, right? No, I'm not insulted. I just want to come coach the team. I think, Rich, here's why if I were Mike D'Antoni, I would find it insulting. Not because of the money involved, because, yeah, at the end of the day, if the Rockets make the playoffs, he probably can make as much as he would have made. At the end of the day, we're talking about seven-figure contracts. Just going back to comp plans for a second, the reason why comp plans, incentive-based comp plans, are put together oftentimes, it's partially to reward people, but most of the time it's to drive a behavior. Most of the time
yeah.
it's because you're trying to get people to do things that they wouldn't otherwise do if they didn't have that sort of incentive on the table.
And he just said it. I'm an incentive-based guy.
And I'm sure in his restaurants he is.
Yes.
And I'm sure if you're hiring a general manager for a Saltgrass, keeping an eye on the profit and loss statement for that restaurant and making sure that you're doing things that make that restaurant more efficient and more attractive for people to come in, well, those are all things that – You need an incentive-based plan for somebody that's in that position to go do. Mike D'Antoni's in a position, Rich. What incentive are you going to give Mike D'Antoni that he doesn't already have?
He doesn't need the job.
In terms
Let's
of
start
a legacy.
With that.
Well, there's that. Mike D'Antoni, you know, all the guys that are in these other businesses, restaurants, casinos, whatever it may be, they need the job. Mike D'Antoni can go back to West Virginia and stick his feet in the lake and sit on millions of dollars. But
it's probably a stretch that he's doing the Rockets a favor, but he's the Rockets need him more than he needs them.
If the incentives in this thing are tied to going into progressive rounds of the playoff, I can tell you right now, nobody wants to win a title more than Mike D'Antoni does.
Yeah.
It's all people talk about with respect to his legacy is he hasn't won a title yet.
To suggest he needs to be incentivized is an insult.
That's my point. That's my point with comp plan. That's why I bring up like the whole thing about how I used to write comp plan. I used to write comp plans because you got to get salespeople up and out of their seat to go do things, even good salespeople. That's why they go do it, and they wake up in the morning because they have an incentive plan put together. Mike D'Antoni wasn't waking up in the morning in 2017, 2018, 2018, 2019 going, maybe I want to win a title. I'm not sure. Oh, I'm going to make an extra $2 million if I win a title?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, now I'm going to coach harder. You know what I mean?
Hey, Tillman got to
be. And I don't think other coaches are compensated like this either.
I agree. Tillman got to be a billionaire, we all know, by executing strategies in the business world that have been highly profitable. His inexperience in the NBA business is showing during this conversation.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. The fact that he's treating the situation like he is strongly suggests that he just doesn't know enough about how this business differs from his businesses he's used to become a billionaire, and that's not good for the Rockets.
I want to touch on one more thing with this Tillman thing that scares me. All right, one more here from the press conference yesterday with Tillman Fertitta, Daryl Morey, and Tad Brown meeting with the media to talk about the latest with the Rockets, most specifically Mike D'Antoni's contract extension. And we're going to circle back to this. I know we will because I just got a text from John McClain letting me know he's up on everything surrounding the Rockets controversy. So I'm anxious to hear the general's take because he's got, I think kind of like you do, Rich, the historical perspective from – have we ever seen owners that, you know, that have been as much of an open book as it feels like Tillman is being here for the first couple of years of his ownership?
Tillman's already shown he's going to be great for this platform,
yes.
for this show, for our daily conversation. There's no doubt about that. I'm starting to get a little concerned about whether he's going to be good for the Rockets.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. He's done more of these sessions in 2 years, and I feel like Les Alexander did in 15 years.
No doubt.
Yeah. So, now, granted, he's overseeing one of the most relevant teams in the league right now because of just how close they've come to winning a title.
Under D'Antoni.
The players that are on the team under D'Antoni, Chris Paul, James Harden, the whole nine yards. It wasn't all D'Antoni that they talked about yesterday. Part of it was moves that they could make with the team. Daryl addressed the Adrian Wojnarowski tweet, and he said, we plan on right now keeping the core of this team together.
I'm optimistic. Some of our main competitors are trying to keep their key people. We're going to keep all our key people next year and be aggressive if we can find better. But we have a great, again.
We're not changing the change. Yeah. If we can improve ourselves, we're going to improve ourselves. But we love our starting five, okay? Yeah,
That was the other part of the press conference where I'm like, man, now I know why Daryl looks like he hasn't slept in 2 weeks. Like Tillman's in there finishing his sentences.
The
for
beer's
him.
Not helping.
It's interesting, Rich, when Daryl says with conviction that we love our starting, and I think they do love the starting five on this team. I think they like all five of these guys. I think they do. I think one of the reasons why Daryl can say with pretty reasonable conviction that they don't intend to move off of this starting five. It's because my guess is Daryl's looked at the landscape and said that there's probably not a lot of deals out there involving these five guys that make our team better in 2019, 2020.
There's definitely a way they can move Capella. There may be or may not be a way they can move Chris Paul. They could probably move Eric Gordon. But like you said, at what cost? I mean, you know, there's not too many deals I can envision out there that aren't going to represent a step back, that might fortify this team for years beyond next season and better prepare them to put together another championship contender. But in the short term, they make a significant deal. It's almost a lock. They're not going to be as good as they've been the last 2 years.
That's why I've felt since the beginning of this postseason, Rich, ever since the doors closed on this season after Game 6, my feeling was they're going to run it back again with this group. Now, I don't think they're going to run it back with a slogan and a hashtag like they did last year, because last year you could run it back with a straight face and say, we feel like we have the best team in the league, because
Absolutely.
If Chris Paul doesn't get hurt, we may have won an NBA championship. So you can put a hashtag, run it back, and you can sell this same group. I think you can sell this same starting five to most Rocket fans, especially because we got to wait and see how the rest of the offseason plays out with certainly the two teams in the finals right now. Could both look significantly different next year, depending on what Kevin Durant and Kawhi Leonard decide to do. But I was glad to hear Tillman kind of throw in there no change for the sake of change, because I think there's been a general fear that like that Tillman as an owner combined with Darryl's apparent, you know, I think people look at Darryl making all these moves that he makes and say that he has this tendency to tinker. I don't think he has this tendency to tinker just to tinker for the sake of tinkering. I think he tinkers to make the team better and set up big moves.
Yeah.
So I think I do think in listening to that press conference yesterday, I was glad to hear that little bit, that this isn't something where they're going to take a look at things and go, you know what, let's just trade Capella and Gordon, bring in something else, because this hasn't gotten us a title yet.
Yeah, look, if I'm a Rockets fan, I'm concerned about what this is going to mean for the ability of this franchise to compete for a championship. I know Tillman just said has said that what you just quoted him as saying, Sean, that he's not going to change just for the sake of change. No. But he is probably going to make changes for the sake of the bottom line and with a very keen eye on the bottom line. And I think this nickel and diming of Mike D'Antoni is just the first really public example of that.
Yeah.
He's nickel and diming a guy for no reason whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I want to stick with the roster here for a second, because it's easy right now if you're Daryl Morey to walk in and sit down with Tillman Fertitta and say, we think that we're cool with this group to make a run at a championship. Because I don't think Tillman's doing anything that involves overspending or going into the luxury tax unless he feels great about a chance to win a championship. So right now, I think that you can reasonably say that the Rockets, with a few little Morey moves in the offseason, mid-level exception, this and that, maybe you get a couple of guys who are willing to come here and play for the minimum to chase rings,
yep,
that you can put a team together where you can sell to ownership and sell to the fan base that this team has a chance to win a championship. My biggest concern, Rich, long-term, with Tillman Fertitta as the owner is this. There's a lot of drama surrounding this team right now, around the roster, especially around the head coach. And this is a team that is one of the three or four best teams in the league.
It's a great point. They're treating this like they need an overhaul.
My biggest concern is that eventually, because this happens all the time in the NBA, is that this cycle is going to play out. And unless Daryl Morey's been very good about pivoting on a dime and making the team competitive again. He's very, very good at that. But let's just pretend for a second that 3 years from now that the Chris Paul contract is up, James Harden is 3 years older, and that they have a team that is maybe unavoidably average. I'm not saying bad, yeah, but just average. That's my biggest concern, is if there's like some perceived Mad King stuff going on right now, when the team is one of the best teams in the league, holy crap, what's going to be going on when this team is 43-39?
This is not the kind of conversation you normally have surrounding a team that's done what the Rockets have done the last 3 years. And if we are at a point where what the Rockets have done over the last 3 years is viewed as some sort of disappointment or falling well below expectations, then the expectations are unrealistic. Because, number one, look, I don't like the way they bowed out against the Warriors more than anybody else here in Houston, especially without Durant.
Yeah.
But we are talking about one of the great dynasties in NBA history. It might be coming to an end against Toronto. We'll see. Durant comes back for this series. Talk about a compelling element to be thrown into this best of seven.
Sure.
But, I mean, we are talking about one of the all-time great NBA championship cores, nucleuses, runs, whatever you want to call it. So for the Rockets to have come up short against that does not reflect poorly on them at all, in my opinion. And like I said, if we're to the point where the sum total of these last three seasons represents some sort of major disappointment that must bring about change and we need to chart a new direction, well, that's ridiculous. Because this is an elite team and an elite franchise right now.
Yeah, I mean, they need improvements for sure. Obviously, they need improvements.
Sure.
But blowing it up, and again, the cut we just played implies that we have an owner and a GM that are aware of that aren't ready to blow it up. That's why I bring up the fact, Rich, that it's logical that you wouldn't want to blow it up when you've averaged 60 wins a season the last 3 years.
Right.
That's why I bring up the fact, though, that there will come a time where this team is vying for an 8 seed. Hell, it happened 3 years ago and James Harden was on the team. They were 41-41.
Yeah.
That's the Tillman that if I'm a diehard Rocket fan, I get a little bit nervous about that. Like, okay, what's going to happen if there is this massive sense of urgency and there are these little soap operas going on right now with a team that quite honestly, about 27 teams in the NBA, there are 27, at least 26 or 27 owners, GMs, and head coaches that would trade spots with Tillman Fertitta, Daryl Morey, and Mike D'Antoni in a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
And so, but you and I have spent, and the station have spent the better part of the last 10 days talking about this team like they're a lottery team in some ways.
Well, that's because that's, I think the actions of this team have suggested that they're at that level of concern.
I know.
About this team. And this is one of those very hot button type topics. So just a reminder on the text page, shoot us a text if you've got a thought on this, 713-572-4610.
I'm going to count on you to stay on that, Rich. My text page isn't working.
I can do that. All you right. mentioned characterization. Honestly, I have no reason to think Warren Legarry was lying to Jonathan Fagan. If he was, I hope the Rockets will challenge what he told Jonathan Fagan. Yeah. But I believe that's the truth about the contract offer that was made by the Rockets.
Why don't you reset that, because people may just be tuning in. There's an article Jonathan Fagan put up where he talked to D'Antoni's agent about what exactly the Rockets' extension offer
was. Warren Legarry claims that the $5 million offer that Tillman Fertitta referenced, not for this coming season, but for the extension season of 2020, it might be $5 million on paper, but apparently it includes D'Antoni making much less than that $5 million, $2.5 million, if they don't make the playoffs, and only pocketing the $2.5 million if he's fired at some point in the season. So, honestly, I think that what Tillman Fertitta said and that we played at the top of the show, where he talked about, you know, one of the top base salary offers, when he talked about
$4 million in incentives.
That's a mischaracterization of this deal.
Well, it's a half characterization. You know what I mean?
Whatever
like,
it is.
He's not. I don't think he's lying. We're just not getting the whole truth.
Yes,
he's telling us the part that sounds
it's
the best.
It's misleading when you don't give us all the details.
Yeah.
Because the other end of it is pretty compelling stuff about how Mike D'Antoni, coach of his stature, coach who's done what he's done in his 3 years at the helm here, is being nickel and dime.
Yeah.
There's no question about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, my biggest issue with the whole incentive-based thing for a contract for Mike D'Antoni is, and I think in the real world, I think incentive-based contracts make a lot of sense. They make sense in almost every job, that you some degree of incentive to get people to give you that little extra 10 or 20%. We have incentives in our contracts, Rich.
They work really well in hospitality businesses, like restaurants and hotels.
They do. They work well in almost any business. Ask any salesperson, right? That's what drives behavior. But an incentive-based plan, if you're trying to drive a certain behavior, it's done for one of two reasons. It's to drive somebody's behavior, or it's because you're trying to balance out the value you're getting from that position with the performance of the company.
Yeah.
And that's not the way these coaches' contracts are done in the NBA. So it's almost like Tillman's like, well, I'm happy to pay you $6 or $7 million, but I just want to make sure that I'm doing that in a season where we win 60 games and we make a run to the NBA finals.
That's not how this business
works. It's not. And so it's going to be really hard to get good coaches if that's how you're going to put it together. You may get you're never going to get a big name coach doing this. I'll say that, because Mike D'Antoni's not going to be here forever. He may not be here when the season starts. Who knows? But if this is the case, if this is how they're going to do business, then the Rockets as an organization better do a damn good job at scouting coaches at the G League level and at other levels that are willing to take entry-level type of stuff and agree to things like this. Because like you said it earlier, Rich, Mike D'Antoni doesn't need this job. When you're putting comp plans together for restaurant managers, pit bosses at casinos, pretty much anything in any walk of life in business, those people need those jobs. They need a check. They have families to feed and things like that. Mike D'Antoni's probably sitting on tens of millions of dollars from coaching in the NBA for all those years.
Yeah.
So it's a fascinating story. We'll certainly circle back to it. Meantime, the Astros, Rich, kind of an underrated big series coming up this weekend.
They're dealing with their fair share of adversity right now as well. Fortunately for them, it hasn't manifested itself on the field yet. They are humming along with a 7.5 game lead over the team they're facing this weekend, the Oakland A's on the West Coast. Despite the fact that Oakland just a few days ago had a 10-game winning streak, they've lost their last two since then.
Okay.
But they've maintained a 7.5 game lead with Altuve, Springer, and now Correa on the injured list. That's pretty noteworthy.
How demoralizing does it have to be in May to string together a 10-game winning streak and you're 7.5 games back in your division, right?
Very.
It's like the boxer that's just swinging on a guy, swinging, punching. You empty the chamber with punches and you look up and the guy's just looking down and laughing. laughing at you.
It's
like
amazing.
He's Frankenstein.
We'll see if they're able to maintain the pace they're on right now. You know, as these guys continue to be missing, Springer could be gone at least another 2 or 3 weeks, maybe longer.
I'm on the record, Rich. Bigger lead at the end of June.
It may be 2 weeks before we see Altuve on the field, and obviously we've just started a 4 to 6 week period without Carlos Correa. One of the reasons they've been able to do as well as they have is the pitching. And, you know, the pitching matchup tonight, it's not exactly a couple of household names, Brad Peacock versus Mike Fiers.
Brad Peacock.
But Brad Peacock, since he went to the full windup, 3-0 with an 0.39.
His season numbers are pretty good.
They are.
5-2 with like a 3.1.
Since he went to the full windup, he's pushing 13 strikeouts per 9 innings pitched. He's been unhittable and mowing down batters via strikeouts like never before. And real quick on Fiers, we know what he did for this Astros franchise. Fiers over his last 6 starts, his ERA's 2.84.
Yeah.
He's pitching like an ace for the Oakland A's.
He pitched pretty well here.
He did.
The year they won the World Series, he carried them in June that year.
There's no doubt about it.
Because Verlander and
their starting rotation had fallen apart.
Yeah, Verlander wasn't on the team yet, and Keuchel and McCullers were both hurt. He carried them through that month of June.
So these are two second-tier names, but pitching like aces who are doing the pitching tonight.
Well, the reason I bring up Peacock's season numbers is, you know, if he puts together a June like he had a May, the Midsummer Classic is coming up. You know, if Brad Peacock's 11-3, you know, if he's 9-3 or 9-4 at the end of June with an ERA in the mid twos, that's a guy who you got to consider for the Did you see the All Star ballot is out, by the way, earlier this week?
They put it out. Yes.
I've gone and looked at some of the experts around baseball that have filled out what their All Star ballot would be right now. And Jose Altuve is on none of them because he's been injured, and even before he was injured, he wasn't hitting like Jose.
243.
Yeah, he wasn't hitting like Jose Altuve. He had 9 home runs, but his batting average was really low. You can put whoever you want to in there. Jose Altuve is winning the All-Star berth at second base.
The fan voting.
People love the little fella.
Sure.
And if he wins, Rich, he will be the 4th second baseman to win fan voting for 4 straight years.
Can I guess?
Who the other 3 are?
Is this American League or MLB?
American League.
So there have been 3 before Altuve that have been voted in by the fans 4 years in a row.
4 years in a row. And actually 2 of them were 5 years in a row, and 1 was 6. So more than Altuve. 3 guys.
Second baseman,
yeah. We can't go with silence on the radio long, Rich, because this is an auditory genre.
Yeah, I don't know why the names I'm thinking of, I keep thinking Ryan Sandberg, National League.
I think one's obvious, like as far as best second baseman through the 90s.
Alomar?
Roberto Alomar had 5. I'll give you the other ones because we're running out of time. Robinson Cano, 5.
Interesting.
This one I think it would take a long time for you to guess because I think most people, at least I do, by the time my fandom was starting to blossom, he was a first baseman. But he spent his early years as a second baseman.
That's a hint.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Minnesota Twins.
Herbeck? No,
Rod Carew.
Herbeck at second base.
Can you imagine? Oh, my God.
Rod Carew. Interesting.
Rod Carew. 6 straight All-Star games, 1970 to 1975. Rod Carew had a sweet swing.
One of the best ever.
Sweet, sweet swing.
Just a natural.
Yep. All right. So Astros, and I like the 9 o'clock games when they're on Fridays and Saturdays.
Yes.
Mondays and Tuesdays are a little tougher.
And by this time this week, Dallas Keuchel is going to have a job. That's my prediction.
Draft is this weekend. So
the draft goes, I think, Sunday through Wednesday, I want to say.
Okay.
So this time next week, Keuchel will have a job.
And Scott Boras is saying, give him a week. He'll be ready to go. He's been pitching in these simulated games. We shall see.
Yeah.
All right.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.